Well, I'd be more than the resistor. I'm the insurgent. Yeah, that's a step up. Hey, Terrible Tommy, you're in the bunker right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, where we still sell regular and ethyl. That's right. You bring your old cans in here and fill them up and tote them home. Hey, we're here in North Central Indiana. Our P.O. Box is 401 Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations. It's time to get your donations in for the radio show. 6 one-hour shows a week, plus all kinds of updates and you name it. Then go up to resist.com, the biggest, wildest, most offensive website on the web, man, when it comes to race and economics, health, environment. It's all up there, baby. We don't pull any punches. If we get something that's good from the left, we use it. We get something good from the right, we use it. We get something good from the middle, we use it. And if we get something good for ourselves, we definitely use it. Well, this is the fourth day of August 2014. Beautiful day. Another beautiful day. Man, I can't believe it. Said it's supposed to have thunderstorms all week up until Friday or Thursday, but so far we haven't seen any of that. It's just been sunshine and cool weather, and haven't seen hardly any mosquitoes or anything like that. I'm telling you, yeah, maybe that's why this town, Warsaw, seems to be growing. They say it has double the increase in jobs of any other town in the state. So, of course, that's attracting a lot more population. So I'm glad I'm way out here in the farmland, in the trees. But I notice about certain times of the day now, you drive into the little town, and it's almost like L.A. traffic. So I think it's about 3 or 4 o'clock, man. It gets pretty wicked. So old Tommy tries to stay clear of that time of day, because I know how that California traffic was that I lived in for 40-some years, and I don't like it. Well, I want to thank Doom Goddess. I got a note from Doom Goddess today about a dirt bag, she says. Avoid at all costs. And I've had letters from this guy from prison. See, the problem is, you know, we do try to help prisoners out a little bit, send them a little literature and like that. But, of course, we have no idea who they are. And we don't have time to go around and see if anybody knows them. So who they are and what they did, we don't really know. But we just send them a little literature at least, because sometimes we run into a good guy or a good gal and it pays to spend a little time with them. Well, this guy's name is Alasio. Yeah, let's see, where is it at here? He went in on kidnapping and unlawful theft or something here. So he was sentenced on 22nd of May 2014. So anyhow, where is it? Oh yeah, Locascio Gene. So if you get a mail from this guy, because I guess he's ripped off some people. I don't know what he's ripped off, but tear up that mail and throw it in the round file, because Doom Goddess got this guy figured out. And anytime you guys out there run into one of these prisoners that you know for sure is bad news, let me know. And so anyhow, that's the story there from Doom Goddess, and she sent her donation in this morning. How about that? Of course, we've known Doom Goddess for a long, long time. Yeah, so she's holding up her end out there in the east, out there around Syracuse. And she is a Doom Goddess she-wolf. Yeah, watch out. Stay out of her way. But she's a cat lady. She's not a dog lady. She's a cat lady. But that's all right. I'm getting more respect for cats all the time, especially when I see the wild animal shows, documentaries on TV, and the independence of the big cats, and how they don't need to run in a tribe. So I don't know. Like I say, maybe we should have called ourselves the White Panthers. No. No, they had the Gray Panthers and the Black Panthers. No, I don't think we need that. But I do give a lot of respect for the wild cats in different forms out there in the woods. Well, so far, the only thing I can see good about this Ebola breakout, well, I can see quite a bit of good if you know how Mother Nature operates and how she is definitely on our side in this particular issue. That's running the Christians out of Africa, American, Canadian, and so forth. An American missionary doctor who contracted the Ebola virus in West Africa was flown home and taken into isolation. Evangelical and Mormon missionaries have been evacuated from the African region. Well, that's the best thing they could do for black people, is get the Christians out of there. They're much better with their animist religions, which were really similar to the Mongol Americans and so forth. Records obtained by CNN reveal that 10 of the country's top Catholic church leaders live in residences worth more than $1 million. Well, you know that. We've known that for a long time. The Church of England has demanded that the British government offer sanctuary to thousands of Christians fleeing jihadists in northern Iraq. Well, yeah, come on into England, yeah. Because we need the money into the Church of England, which is a state religion, of course. You know. Restaurant owners in North Carolina are giving patrons a 15% discount for praying in public. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Incidentally, I got a new sign on my big public sign out in front of my house. It's lit. It's lighted up all night long. It says, honk if you're tired of being Israel's whore. I just put it up, so it hasn't been that much traffic yet. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of response I get as far as honks are concerned. And what I will bet you, that when the big amount of high school students that go past here every day come by, we're going to get more honks from these young people than, of course, we are the old people that are all mostly into Israel. Even if they're not even good Christians. Oh, Israel, Israel, Israel. Israel can do no wrong. Fox TV told me so. But I think we'll see that because of the anti-war sentiment of more and more young people. So we'll just have to stand by for that. That's restaurant owners in North Carolina are giving patrons a 15% discount for praying in public. Well, why do they need discounts? Yeah, they go around praying anytime they want to. You know, all this stuff about they can't pray at school. Well, you can pray any place you want, but you just don't need to go out screaming and yelling and doing it out loud. You can pray to yourself any place you want, if you're a Christian or Muslim or a Jew or whoever you are. That's a bunch of bullshit, you know. What they really want is to control the situation in the schools and in the government and so forth, of which the Christians and the Jews, through their religion, do control massive amounts of our government. Even though they talk about separation of church and state, that is all bullshit. It's always been bullshit. American missionary Kenneth Bay, who has been held in North Korea for 2 years, tells a North Korean paper his health is failing. A Bible left in North Korean Sailors Club toilet triggered an American tourist arrest. Well, keep your damn Jew Bibles out of North Korea. I don't blame North Koreans for throwing you in jail. I'd like to throw a lot of Christians in jail for throwing these Bibles around here, because the Bible is the most violent, dirty, porno, murderous, genocidal book ever printed. I know there's some things in the Bible that are okay, that make sense, but most of it is a genocidal, murderous book. And it should be outlawed and kept out of the hands of children, say, up until they're 18. I don't believe in total suppression of free speech. I believe in open free speech, but I believe in open debate, too. But I think it's a crime to have children reading this crap out of the Bible before they're 18 and they're old enough to sort of understand that it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Especially about all those foreskins. Kentucky has approved $18 million in new tax breaks for a controversial Christian theme park. that is to feature a 510-foot-long replica of Noah's Ark, which never existed. New tax break. $18 million in tax breaks for some bunch of preachers to make a fortune off this theme park, you know. They've got them around the country and other places, too. Every place down south or in a lot of other places that has any kind of a theme park, they're going to push Christianity, push the Old Testament. Bible Belt filmmakers who make successful low-budget films like Courageous and Fireproof are expanding their box office horizons as Hollywood starts to catch on. Well, yeah, the Jews figured out they can make some more money off the Christian boobs. But I don't know how that's going to work with the local preachers, because it takes people out of the pews on Sunday and they're down at the movies watching a different way that the Jews say it happened. A different way the myths happen. A Thai surrogate mother left with one twin by his Australian biological parents after the other twin was born with Down syndrome. The parents had asked her to abort the disabled fetus, but she refused for religious reasons. Now at 21, she's raising the baby. And I saw that on television. I think they're bringing this Thai mother with this screwed up kid over to Australia, I think. These white parents were definitely right in saying it should have been aborted. Any fetus that can be detected to be a mongoloid or anything like that should be aborted, of course, in any sane society. Even back in the tribal days in Northern Europe, a baby would come out all screwed up. They'd dump the baby, you know. Tomorrow marks 2 years since the shooting at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin. Sikhism's teaching on forgiveness and peace sustains one family praying for recovery for a victim who can't speak or move. Well, that is bullshit, because the Sikh violence is well noted over in India and other places. Very violent. They're even issued a knife at puberty, or sometime when they're young. They're given a killing knife. So all that stuff about Sikh, you get on their bad side and you watch what the Sikhs do. So all you people that Christians and others that are always crying for these people, well, maybe you'll get a Sikh knife stuck in your chest. A good reading from RNS, Religious News Service: young adults born to pagan parents are a lot like their peers of all faiths. They do spirituality their own way, and many don't do it at all. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, there's an update on religion. Well, I don't know whether this is false flag or not, but among the significant revelations are that individuals from nations currently suffering from the world's largest Ebola outbreak have been caught attempting to sneak across the porous U.S. border into the interior of the United States. At least 71 individuals from three nations affected by the current Ebola outbreak have either turned themselves in or been caught attempting to illegally enter the U.S. by U.S. authorities between January 2014 and July 2014. Of course, you didn't see any notice of warning, did you, from the Center for Disease Control, governors of your states, Washington? I told you a long time ago this is what's going to happen. This is going to be your germ warfare, your biological warfare, and whether enemy or not enemy, or not intended enemy, it's going to do the same thing. If these heavily infected people get into major urban centers like L.A., New York, all your big cities, it's going to be hell to pay. Now, it's going to be interesting, because we keep hearing these people in the government and other places say, oh, well, it's no problem, we've got it under control, we got a great infectious disease department here at Emory University and all that bullshit. It sounds to me like something just before the plague broke out in Europe back in the old days. So anyhow, there's an article that goes with this from Breitbart. Now, Breitbart's a, I don't know, conservative or neocon or whatever outfit. But I'm going to send it along to you anyhow, and you can take it for what it's worth. And if you're living in a big city, you better start making some preparations. Well, here we go with the religious nuts. Major warning. Proof God's about to pour out his wrath. Ebola. TB. Psalms 83. War. Blood Moon. Tetrad. Mark of the Beast. NWO. And more stunning evidence. Quote, the Lord is a jealous and vengeful God. He is a son of a bitch, that's for sure. The Lord is a vengeful and strong in wrath. Most of the time. The Lord is vengeful against his foes. I think he hates everybody. He rages against his enemies, is everybody that's human. The Lord is very patient, but great in power. The Lord punishes. His way is in whirlwind and storm. Clouds are. Let me clue you in. The problems of humans are humans. We create our own wrath and all that kind of crap. It's not spooks in the sky, man. It ain't spooks in the sky, I'll guarantee you that. Don't blame it on poor old God. He's just sitting up there on his cloud, fiddling his fiddle. Or fiddling with something. Don't blame poor old God for everything. Poor guy. Poor gal. Comes from this top 10 trending stories they keep sending me, and most of them are a bunch of crap, so I would just dump them if I were you. Well, in case you didn't know how Canadian Jews and other goyim feel about this thing that's going on in Israel, I'll let you listen to a little bit.
In Israel, we want to send our support to all the soldiers and may they come back home safely, and we wish them all the best. Amisrael Chai.
Yes, shalom aleichem. Canada loves you, Israel.
Guys, we're proud of you. We love you. Keep on the good work. We got your back. We got your back. I'm Israel Chai. I'm Israel Chai.
Woo! Israel, Canada supports you. And for my son in Golani, in Gaza right now, please be safe and come home. We love you. Everybody's waiting for you.
כל החיילים, תחזרו בשלום, זה הכי חשוב, אוהבים אתכם.
To the IDF, we're with you here in Canada. Stay strong, boys.
אני רוצה לברך את אמא שלי, שגרה באשקלון. אני רוצה לברך אותה, ומתגעגעת לבת שלי קרן, עם הבייבי שלה שלו, ובעלה שי. אני מברכת אתכם.
Israel, we just want you to know that we're with you. You're not alone. You've got tons of support. And Netanyahu, you are absolutely amazing and hot.
To my friends in the IDF, I'm Israel Chai, and let us be victorious. Tanchanim. We adore you guys. Thank you so much for everything you do to keep the Jewish state, you know, up and running and surviving. Thank you. We love you.
Thank you, Miami.
I support Israel.
We're with you, Israel.
That may give you a little bit of an idea about the support that all these infiltrator Jews are giving to Israel, and more loyalty than they would ever give to Canada. That's the problem of a hell of a lot of Zionist Jews and Christian Zionists. Their real loyalty is to the Jewish state or the Jew religion or the pseudo-Christian Zionist religion. And they can't be trusted, period. Well, it looks like one country may have gone a little farther even than the old, good old Uncle Sammy's country here. That's Australia. Let's hear a little bit about what's going on down in Australia as far as their privacy is concerned. Okay, County.
We're still at home, and censored government documents outlining controversial plans to spy on unsuspecting internet users have been revealed. Top-level government officials have been in talks with the internet industry over a proposal to log and store the web activities of every Australian, even if you're not suspected of committing a crime. Then the data will be made available to law enforcement agencies around the country.
Now, the government had intended to keep this plan under wraps. However, the largely censored documents were obtained under the Freedom of Information laws, with 90% of the detail crossed out with a thick black marker. So what exactly are they hiding?
For more on this, we're joined by tech expert and managing editor of gizmodo.com.au, Seamus Byrne, and in Melbourne, online privacy expert Colin Jacobs from Electronic Frontiers Australia. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Seamus, why would the government want this information? It seems a lot of information to be collecting on every single Australian and their internet activity.
Yeah, I mean, their argument is that this would be similar to laws that are already in place in Europe, and that this is based on being able to combat terrorist activity, and that's sort of how it came to be in Europe. But I think one of the issues attached to that basic idea is that, of course, if you throw more hay on the haystack, then maybe it starts to get harder to find those needles.
Seamus, exactly what kind of data would they be interested in keeping?
This is the big question, of course, and this is why the Sydney Morning Herald kind of put out that Freedom of Information request to try to find that detail. And this is what's happened, is that we've not been told. Now, if we look at the European laws that are in place, they're sort of more based around when people have been accessing the internet, things like that. But some of the industry insiders here have actually been suggesting that they were asking for a lot more. They were asking for what is ultimately web browsing history. Now, while the government has denied that that's what they're asking for, it's ultimately a technicality that they're arguing, because if they're looking for like IP addresses, which basically means you can still find out exactly what websites people have been going to.
All right, Colin, what are your concerns with the government storing this kind of data?
Well, there are huge privacy concerns for a start. I mean, all of us use the internet for everything from negotiating sensitive business deals to sending intimate messages to loved ones. If the government really is on this fishing expedition to collect as much information as possible about our communications, we're going to end up with every internet service provider in the country having a huge database of information about everything we've done, and as we've just heard, potentially including the websites we've visited. Once this database exists, there are obviously huge concerns about who might have access to it, when and under what circumstances the government might look at it, and what might happen if it somehow leaks out into the wider world. So the privacy issues are very worrying, as well as the secretive nature about which the government has gone about this.
It sounds very Cold War-ish, doesn't it? Is it even legal to spy on web users?
Well, actually, there are very tough laws in this country controlling what you can do with other people's communications. In fact, the government may have fallen afoul of these laws just recently itself when it conducted trials of internet censorship, because that involved interfering in people's internet connections. And Google have gotten into trouble as well. So it may be even possible that they would have to amend the laws regarding snooping on communications to bring in this new data collection and data retention system.
Okay, Sean, so before we go, do we know at what stage this is at? This was information obtained under the Freedom of Information. Is this something they're looking at?
Yeah, so this was something that was secretly distributed to Australian internet service providers in March. And at the time, they actually asked people to kind of write back to them within a month. So it seemed like they were in a big hurry, and of course, if they're in such a hurry, then why are they trying to keep it such a secret?
All right, Seamus, thank you.
Seamus, the guys on the crew still want to know, is it safe to browse the web?
Yes, for now.
All right.
Doesn't matter if the government's watching just their wives, right? Thank you, Seamus, and thank you too, Colin.
Off we go to the UK.
Well, sometimes it takes a black man to give us good news. Juan Williams here in this interview. Let's listen to what he's got to say about all these Tay Bikers, and he's old WAP people.
Find a tool within the rule of law to constrain it is a frustrating challenge. Why?
Well, I think, you listen to Michael and you understand why there are lots of Republicans who think this man's a demon. This guy's awful. We got to get this guy out of here any way we can. He's breaking the law. I don't agree with a lot of the points that you were making, Michael, but I hear this on talk radio. I hear this in conservative towns that people are saying, we think this guy's way over the line. And then they say, oh, yeah, we got to find a way to get...
Firefighters in Northeastern California are focusing on two mess...
We use the impeachment word, and then you come on and say, oh, no, we're not...
Wildfires burning out of control about...
Well, that wasn't my glitch. That was the web. Now, let's get back at it and see what Juan Williams was really trying to get through here. Maybe he's being sabotaged by those Republicans who don't want to be called racist.
The minority community see it as an attack on the first black president, think it's unfair, and so it's going to spur their turnout in midterms, which is going to be critical in several races.
And I want to pick up on exactly that point. Do you think that the Republican opposition to this president, you heard Hakeem Jeffries talk about hatred, is racial, or do you think it's based on principles and policies?
Well, all I can do is look at the numbers. If you look at the core constituency, the people who are in, let's say, Tea Party opposition support of impeachment, there's no diversity. It's a white, older group of people. As to whether or not it's racial, you know, look, President Obama and others have said there's some people who don't like him because of his race, some people who do like him. But I would say if you just break it down as a matter of political analysis and say, who is this group? It reminds me that the Republican Party has become almost a completely white party.
Chris, if you were to open up your dictionary to the word irony, you would find Juan Williams in there claiming that I am demonizing people because I'm saying that the President of the United States is lawless, which, by the way, the Supreme Court agreed with.
No, 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 no.
And then
not
Juan Williams and Denny's lawless. You can take any racial element to the impeachment. That is a ridiculous, ironic statement. You're the one demonizing people who are concerned about the fact that we have a crisis of the Constitution. With Jonathan Turley, a liberal law professor, just testified in the last couple of weeks. You're the one demonizing. You're demonizing
Michael,
good people.
Michael,
who are
nobody,
concerned about a president
look,
who is completely
out of control. We can have a principled argument about President Obama's actions and the use of executive actions and authority. But if you call him lawless, as if he's an outlaw, as if, you know, you have him riding the range, we got to go get that guy.
I think when 9-0 on the Supreme Court.
The court constituency, the people who want him impeached, they're all white and they're all older, and guess what? They're all in the far right wing of the Republican Party.
And he might as well have just said, and they're all racist. That's ridiculous.
Look, I think...
You have to get your news from a black guy. Juan Williams, he's got it pegged. They're all closet racists. You know that. I know that. And even if they don't realize it themselves, they're racist. It's biological. It's inherited, and that's it. And they don't like Obama because he's a nigger. Most of the Republican Party go that way. But the problem is they're such hypocrites because they'll go out of their way to say, oh, no, my best friends are Negroes. Oh, I work with Negroes, and oh, they're wonderful, and I go to nigger football games and all that kind of stuff. This is a state, all these white people that are closet racist, and all these Christian goody-two-shoes that are closet racist. It takes a Negro like Juan Williams to tell the truth. And these are the same people, these Republicans, that will stand in front of me and call me nasty names and everything else and run me down and all that. And it's amazing. It's the most hypocritical thing that can possibly be. And it's no wonder why a large percentage of the Negro race hates the white race. They wouldn't hate them near as much if they'd be honest about it. You know, at least down south when they had the plantation, the blacks, they knew where they were at, and the overseer and the owner knew where he was at, and the white poor peasant, he knew where he was at, and there was a lot more respect going on than there is now. But every time a black guy comes up and tells the truth about the racism of the white race, the whole roof blows off. It's hilarious. Here's another case. This took place down in Australia, where the least little comment and the white guilt goes crazy. A Liberal candidate at November's Victorian election has quit after party officials were told of offensive posts on his Facebook page. Jack Lyons was standing for the marginal seat of Bendigo West. The former publican defended the comments by saying they were jokes and he hoped they did not offend anyone. Well, he should have said they were jokes and I don't care if they offended someone, News Limited reported. It was reported his comments included referring to Bendigo's Golden Dragon Asian Museum as King Chong Gardens, while a number of comments also objectified women. Oh my goodness. In a statement, Liberal Party State Director Damien Mentok said Mr. Lyons had withdrawn his candidacy. Well, let's see here. What else did it say? His comments were written as jokes and were posted in a closed Facebook page some years before he became a member of the Liberal Party, Mr. Mentok told News Limited. Mr. Lyons was unavailable for comment on Monday night. He is the second Liberal candidate to resign over social media posts. You see, not all Liberals are what the Liberals are here in this country. Arian Lane was the endorsed Liberal candidate for the upper house seat of the Western Region for November 29 election when he resigned last week over a series of crude tweets. Oh, so you better quit. Watch how you tweet, boys and girls. Yeah. Oh. I'm sure you're all aware of Mitch McConnell, that asshole Republican down there from Kentucky, I think, that never saw a war he didn't want to get into, and never saw a bank he didn't love, never saw a corporation he didn't love. But he's got a little problem here because, you know, he's married to a Gukas, and some of his Democrat lackeys, who are supposedly to be squeaky clean about race, seem to let the cat out of the bag that they're not so unracist as they act. Let's see if we can run this.
Over the weekend, 20,000 people showed up for all the speeches and the fireworks, and it's this tweet that continues to make national headlines. Democratic operative Kathy Groob tweeted this right here, that when you Google Elaine Chao, Mitch McConnell's wife, there is no mention of Kentucky. She is Asian. The tweet created a lot of controversy. Kentucky's Democratic Party immediately rebuked that comment, including Senate candidate Allison Lundgren Grimes. Here's her exclusive response.
You know, I've made clear since the beginning of this race, comments like that have no place in the United States Senate and aren't authorized from me or anybody on my team.
Now, Grimes points out that her team had absolutely nothing to do with that tweet. She will be appearing Wednesday in Lexington and in Hazard with President Bill Clinton in a campaign event.
Boy, they really go crazy about this white guilt. You know, that was at the fancy farm get-together down in Kentucky. As partisans prepared for the much-anticipated fancy farm speeches Saturday afternoon, the Kentucky Democratic Party has delivered a sharp rebuke to a series of comments on Twitter from a Democratic operative who referenced the ethnicity, in other words, the race, of Elaine Chao, the wife of Republican U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell. Quote, Google Elaine Chao, Mitch McConnell's wife, quote, Kathy Groob tweeted Saturday morning, quote, no mention of Kentucky, she's an Asian, unquote. Now, that is, what's the big deal? She's a gook. That's probably what I would have said. I mean, come on. These people are unbelievable. They just lay there and wait for someone to say anything, any little thing that might be a little bit racial, and, oh, I got him now. I got you. I got you. I got you. Yeah, Mitch McConnell couldn't find a white woman in Kentucky. He had to go to China. Well, I see some of the Swedish, I believe, and Scandinavians or whatever, Scandinavians have moved over to Norway, which would mean, why don't they bring some of those National Socialists who are down there fighting in Ukraine back up there to straighten things out in the Nordic countries? It says here, the Nordic Resistance Movement is an organization that wants to create a unified Nordic region under National Socialist rule. The organization was created in 1997, was originally Swedish, only then known as the Swedish Resistance Movement, but now also exists in Finland, Norway, and Denmark. Most of the founding members came from the now non-existent organization VAM, White Aryan Resistance. How about that? And from the youth organization National Youth, are originally a part of the Swedish Democratic Youth Organization, SDU. But the members were excluded from SDU for being too militant and too radical. The Nordic Resistance Movement is particularly well known in Sweden, where they're most established for their activism. Among other things, members have attacked art exhibitions they deem immoral. An exhibition with photos of naked children having their genitals touched by adult men, and an exhibition with pictures of dead animals. The organization has also spread information about pedophiles and to the general public. They also campaigned for the release of National Socialist Nicholas Frost, who allegedly got wrongfully convicted of attempted murder after having defended himself and his comrades against attacking members from the anti-fascist action, which is probably connected to the one here in this country. Anyhow, that's the way that goes. Interesting that they once had White Aryan Resistance. I might have read about that before, but I don't recall. Well, if they operate as a really true National Socialist group, politically and so forth, and not just a common street gang, they could get somewhere. Another comment in the Swedish press, there's a claim currently circulating the EU, both cynical and misleading, he says, this writer. Multiculturalism is dead in Europe. No wonder, as the conglomerate of nation-states, EU, has silently handed over one of its most important debates, that of European identity, to the wing parties, recently followed by the several selective and counterproductive foreign policy actions. Well, that's interesting. What are they saying about oil up there in Norway? The Gulf OPEC states and Libya have by far the lowest cost of oil extraction, thanks to the high crude purity, which is simplifying and cheapening the refinement process, as well as the close proximity to open warm seas for fast and convenient overseas shipment. And it's interesting, they had to get Gaddafi out of the way, of course, to get control of that oil. Hence, the cost per barrel of crude from Libya and the Persian Gulf states are under $5. For other OPEC states, below $10. This is in a sharp contrast to countries such as the U.S., Russia, Norway, Canada, and many others that bear production costs of several tens of dollars per barrel, according to the International Energy Agency, IEA. Thus, although commercially very affordable, Europe presently pays a huge political price for the MENA crude imports. Now, here's more interesting stuff here. What does it say here? Where am I at here? Well, anyhow, it says that... By correlating the hydrocarbons in the present political and social economic landscape, scholar Larry Diamond revealed that currently 22 states in the world, which earn 60% or more of their respective GDP from oil and gas, are a non-democratic authoritarian regimes, all of them with huge disparities, steep social economic cleavages, sharp political inequalities, and lasting exclusions, not to mention dismal human rights records. These represent nearly half of the countries considered by the Freedom House annual reports as not free, the very same that are predominantly held accountable for the Western media, by the Western media, for domestic and regional insurgents, international armed conflicts, famines as well as for terrorist harboring and financing. Hence, as many as 9 of the 11 top crude exporters are usually labeled as dictatorships and or despotic monarchies and so forth. Well, of course, the capitalist, you know, oil mongers, that's how they have to have control. They can't have a democratic decision in these countries. They have to control the whole thing at the top through some puppet, and that lets them get their oil out without much interference, you see. You know, they don't want any arguments about it. They just want a guy in there that'll do the job, you know. Well, let's tune in here and see what some of the Israeli soldiers are talking about. What do you think?
This interviews Akai Sharon and Noam Kayut, both veterans of the Israeli Defense Forces. All young Israelis, male and female, with few exceptions, are required to serve 2 to 3 years of active military duty in the Israeli Defense Forces. Sharon and Kayut served during the Second Intifada, a 4-year-long bloodbath that claimed the lives of over 3,000 Palestinians and 950 Israelis. After thorough introspection, these young men have chosen to speak out about their experiences as self-described brutal occupiers of a disputed land. And Sharon and Kayut are not alone. They are members of a new forum for young Israeli Defense Forces veterans called Breaking the Silence. Now a worldwide exhibition, Breaking the Silence features photo and art displays and live speeches. Now, Sharon and Kayut share their stories.
Most of the missions that my unit was given and carried out were arrest operations, search operations, going into, taking over cities or towns or villages, of course in the nighttime. And sometimes you would continue in the same place for a few days, searching, going from one house to the other, searching them, taking over houses as observation points, or arresting people. And that's your routine. My routine was, or our routine, was that we never knew where we're going to be from one minute to the other. One night we could be in Nablus, the next night we could be in Gaza, the next night we could be in Hebron. And at a certain point you just lose track of where you are, who you are, and what you're doing, because you go into, you disrupt people's lives on a daily basis. And for me that was the most, I think when I look at it today, when I reflect on it today, as someone who couldn't do that during your service, because you can't really live in the, you know, denial way of life where you can't look at what you're doing, you can't really reflect on it. But when I reflect on it today from this perspective, I can say that that was probably for me the deepest example of corruption. Not the extreme cases where there was shooting or stuff like that, but just thinking that there were hundreds of thousands of families that couldn't have one peaceful night of sleep in their homes. I mean, who in today in the USA, in Israel, and anywhere else would be willing to live like that, not knowing if at 2 o'clock in the morning 20 soldiers will take over your house for a week, not knowing, sitting in your living room and suddenly hearing smashing on the wall, and there is a hole in the wall, and suddenly 20 soldiers come to visit. And for me, that was routine.
In the newspaper, I saw an article about the confiscation, car keys confiscation, when you detain car during enforce curfew, when you detain cars because they just passed the line that close to checkpoint, whatever. And it's not the article and the soldier that brought out more or less 100 car keys and brought it to the press, but the response of the spokesman, sir, of the IDF, the spokesman of the IDF that said, this is an extreme case, a rotten apple, it will be checked, examined, and won't happen again. And now, I give the order to take Palestinian car keys and to detain cars hundreds of times in my unit. I saw in the West Bank boxes full of car keys and IDs that were taken and were supposed to be returned. But and then I know my father read the newspaper for me, and I know that he believed. I mean, he's from a different generation where things maybe were better, or when people could believe the system. And he really thinks that this is an extreme case that won't happen again. And for me, it was a point of resentment that I'm not back for what I did. And I didn't do it for fun. I got my orders. I thought it was okay. I thought I was a part of a system that protects Israel from terror attacks. And then I understand that it's just a game of keeping information inside and not letting anybody know. And how can you criticize? How can you ask questions? And that was maybe one of the first times that I asked what's going on here.
And one time when we finished an operation in Nablus, and it was really destructive. We were 5 or 6 days straight in Nablus with a lot of IDF forces, tanks, and APCs. And it was very destructive. I mean, the whole infrastructure of the city was torn up. There was a lot of houses that were either damaged or even destroyed. And there was a lot of shooting, mostly by the IDF, into the city. And when we got out of there, the first thing that happened when we left the city, got back to the army barrack, was I heard a radio news flash, which happens every hour in Israel. And it was going like, IDF forces left Nablus after a search and arrest operation and found this and that. And that's it. And I think that even then, I suddenly realized my parents are not sitting at home. They're listening to the radio. And they're sure that here we are, their heroes, their son, they sent, found weapons and ammunition and did this and that and that and so important things to defend his country, but they don't know the truth. They don't know that 99% of what we did there was destroy people.
Well, you got to understand that, all armies of occupation do the same thing. They really do. I would challenge anybody to tell me that in any type of a hot situation that occupation troops don't act in immoral ways much of the time. So these Israeli kids, they're just young kids, they're just doing what all occupation armies do, Of course, some occupation armies are more extreme than others, but they all operate essentially in the same way. And then the public sits back and either says, oh, they couldn't have done that, these are our boys, or, they totally say, oh, well, that's okay because they had to do it. Yeah, they had to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Just had to do it because the Japanese were never going to surrender, which we know is a lie. We've got to attack Russia, kill all those communists. Otherwise, millions of us are going to die. Well, they did attack Russia, and millions of them did die. You see how that goes? I want to turn you on to a Netflix alleged documentary that it's pretty hard to tell whether it was true or false. But it's quite well done, about a man who is a Marine Corps Force Recon sharpshooter, that he's almost ready to die. He's got a few weeks to live, and he contacts a reporter and tells him he was the shooter on the grassy knoll in Dallas. He shot Kennedy. He was the one who got the coup de grace. But I'll tell you, and I'm not sure. It may have been all fiction. But the point is, this guy was the coolest, ice in the blood guys I've seen in a long time. A real lone wolf type. I mean, a real lone wolf type. So if you watch it, especially the first half of the documentary. Listen to what he says. This guy, they said, well, now how'd you feel when you shot Kennedy? He said, I didn't feel anything. He was the most powerful man in the world. Now I'm the most powerful man in the world. He said, I had no feeling one way or another. You know, so anyhow. And then there's another one, too. I think the star of the thing was Raymond J. Barry, but I've never heard of him before. And that's Interview with an Assassin, if you didn't catch it or I didn't say it right the first time. Now here's another good film on Netflix, No God, No Master. No God, No Master. It's back in 1919 when the anarchists were running around blowing up people. And the first head of the FBI, in fact, in the film, he's not the head of the FBI. But I never realized that for at least a short while, maybe 2 or 3 years, a man by the name of Flynn was the head of the FBI, and then he quit, and J. Edgar Hoover took over. Well, in this film, all these people of the day have actors playing their parts, like Mitchell Palmer and the Palmer raids and all that kind of stuff. Sacco and Vanzetti are in it, and J. Edgar Hoover's in it, and all these people. And like I say, it takes place in 1919, and I think it's a hell of a good movie, and it makes you think, you know, because you got Emma Goldman's in it, and I forget some of the other people, but it shows you the differences between the real radical anarchists and the people who are trying to get fair wages and labor conditions without blowing everything up. So anyhow, No God, what did I say? What the hell did I say? Yeah, No God, No Master, that's it. Netflix. You want to know who the most dangerous department in this country? It's the State Department. Almost everything that's counterproductive to the white race emanates from the State Department, including leaving Ebola, people infected with Ebola, into the country, making fiat rules that let illegal aliens into the country, bringing in Somalians by the tens of thousands into places like Ohio and small white towns. It all emanates out of the State Department. So if you, other than the military-industrial complex and the Pentagon, the State Department is the larger danger to overall white America than the rest. You just watch. Every time something really bad comes up, the decision's made by the State Department. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Tuesday. And if Sling Blade's supposed to be on here, if you'll get me his telephone number. I told him I lost his telephone number. So if I get that phone number or he calls me, we'll have him on the show tomorrow. 14-5 and shut up.
The clouds and where to go.